This is episode zero, otherwise known as... Wait, who are you again? Welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former business executive with Fortune 500 companies. Today, I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, we bring you exciting stories from the world of social entrepreneurs, benefit corporations, and impact investing. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Okay, admit it now. You were dancing just a little bit. Even if you were in your chair, you were chair dancing. You know you were. I know I was. All right. Hi, I'm Tony, as I said in the introduction. And welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. This is what we call the Episode Zero. And Episode Zero is basically where I introduce myself. I talk about what is social entrepreneurship. And then we talk about the podcast and about what will be in it. And I just wanted to say up front that this is sort of an unusual episode in the fact that I don't have a guest. I usually do interviews. There's usually somebody else in the studio and I'm talking to them or on Skype or however we do it. But in this one, it's just going to be me. This is a solo round, I guess you could say. I wanted to start with a little bit about me and about how we ended up on this podcast, you listening to it, me talking to you, and thanks for sharing your earbuds with me. I know this is a choice you have to listen or to listen to something else, and there's lots of great content out there. So I just wanted to say up front, thank you, that I am grateful that you are choosing to be with us. But the story I want to tell you, it starts in 2010, in the year 2010, and it starts in Kenya, and it starts with a woman named Sarah Ruto. And I've never met Sarah, but her story intersects with my story. And this first part of the story, I like to call it Mrs. Ruto Buys a Phone. So Sarah Ruto lived in Kenya with her six children and her husband in a rural area without electricity. She raised primarily chickens, but other livestock. So she wasn't the poorest of the poor. She wasn't one of those who lives on less than $2 per day. But she's at the bottom of the pyramid when it comes to the socioeconomic strata. And Sarah Ruto raised chickens. And she really wanted to know what the price that she could get for her chickens at what time and where nearby her. So that's what she wanted. And she also wanted to be able to do financial transactions. And a lot of people in Africa do that via mobile phone. Now, for you and I, when we realized that Sarah Ruto did not have electricity in her home, and yet she wanted a mobile phone, that might seem a little confusing to a lot of people listening to this podcast. But when you realize that a lot of financial transactions and a lot of data was available to her through a mobile phone that was not available to her in any other way, you understand her motivation. So Sarah bought, at the beginning of 2010, Sarah Ruto bought a mobile phone. And of course, like any mobile phone, the battery will eventually discharge. So to charge the phone, she did not have electricity, and neither did any of her neighbors. So she would walk for 2 miles. She would get on the back of a motorcycle taxi. She would ride that motorcycle for 3 hours. And then when she reached her destination, it was only 30 cents for someone to charge her phone. However, there was such a demand for that service, she had to leave the phone there for 3 days, which meant she had to get back on the motorcycle, ride 3 hours home. She would spend her time in her village for 3 days, and then she would walk another 2 miles, get back on the motorcycle, ride for 3 hours, pick up her phone, get back on the motorcycle. You see where this is going. So this was her life until one day in her village, someone who was representing a company called Barefoot Power came through, and this was an entrepreneur. And this entrepreneur showed her his wares, and one of the things that he had from Barefoot Power was this solar panel, about the size of an iPad, maybe, something about that size. So don't think big, massive solar panel that goes on to a house, or don't think utility-size solar panels, but think about a small solar panel about the size of a first-generation iPad. And it had an LED light, and it had electrical outlets. And she could charge her cell phone on this solar panel. And Sarah Ruto really wanted that panel. So she went out, and she sold some chickens, and she purchased this solar panel with the LED light, and it's called the Firefly. And it's available from Barefoot Power. And she put that little solar panel on her roof. And when I say on her roof, it's a place she can just reach up with her hand and place this thing up on her roof. And it charged the LED light, and it charged her cell phone, and she didn't have to make that ride again. Now, there's more to the story than this, because not only did it charge her cell phone, but also she did not have to buy kerosene for her kerosene lamp. Now, she has 6 children. Some of them were very small, and some of them were teenagers in school. And the teenagers in school were able to study by the LED lamp, and their marks in their school began to improve. And the whole family no longer had to breathe the fumes from the kerosene lamp. And there was no danger that a child was going to burn themselves. And there was no danger that the lamp would get knocked over and they would burn down their hut. So Sarah Ruto not only gained an ability to charge her phone, so now she can do her banking transactions. She can find the best price for her chickens. She also improved the scores of her children at home. She also improved the safety and the health and well-being of her family. And she no longer had to pay. She was paying $20 a month for that taxi service, so she no longer had to pay that. She didn't have to buy kerosene. So this solar panel and lamp and outlets, it paid for itself in a very short period of time. And so with all of these wins, what fascinates me about this story is that it didn't happen because of a charity. It didn't happen because of an NGO. It didn't happen because of a missionary. It happened because of an entrepreneur. Now, Sarah's story came to the attention of Elizabeth Rosenthal. And Elizabeth Rosenthal writes for the New York Times. And so in December of 2010, Elizabeth Rosenthal wrote a story about, it was generally about how solar power is leapfrogging the need for infrastructure in Africa, especially in Kenya, and it's lighting up these huts across the countryside. And I will put a link to that story in the show notes, and I'll tell you at the end how to get to those show notes. So what does that have to do with why we are here? Well, in December of 2010, I was tired And any of you who have these sort of large global roles with, Fortune 500 companies, and you travel the world and you're in different time zones, you know what I mean about that kind of tired. Not only did it have an impact on my physical body, so I was tired coming into Christmas of 2010, but it was weighing on my family a little bit. And so my wife and I, Lynn, we decided that for Christmas 2010, we were going to go to Chicago, and we checked into the Talbot Hotel. And we did some shopping, and we ate at really nice restaurants. And so on Christmas morning, I went down to the lobby of the Talbot Hotel, and I picked up a copy of the Chicago Tribune, and I also picked up a copy of the New York Times. Now, one of the great luxuries about being on holiday is reading a newspaper. I am talking about a physical paper, and I have always loved this. So I went up to the room, and I brought this newspaper, and I sat it down between Lynn and I, and we sat there just sort of luxuriating on Christmas morning, listening to some nice sounds outside, and it was cool outside in Chicago, and we had some nice warm coffee, and we were reading the newspaper together, and it was just such a great feeling. And I ran across Elizabeth Rosenthal's article about Sara Ruto. This is the part of the story that I call Tony's River of Life Takes a Turn. So as a person who teaches leadership development around the world, one of my favorite exercises is when we talk to leaders about their river of life, and we actually have them draw this river of life. And what it is they draw a river representing the twists and the turns and the shifts and the deep places and the narrow places and all the changes that have happened in their life. And the day that I read this article was a day that there was a bend in my river of life. Now, at the time, I was, the global head of learning and development for a company, about $3.5 billion company, 10,500 employees, global company. And there was something about this story that stuck with me. And I really loved this idea about how business could do good in the world. And all the benefits that came to Sarah, and the benefits to the planet, and the benefits to her community, and the benefits to the entrepreneur who came and delivered those services and goods and extracted a payment from Sarah, but Sarah, of course, benefited because she didn't have to pay for kerosene and she didn't have to go on a motorcycle ride. So this was a fascinating idea to me. Business that does good. Now, you know, at the time I wasn't in Evil Corp. It's not as if I was working for some, you know, terrible bad company. This was in 2010, and so I began to read more about this idea about entrepreneurship that does good. And the word that began to form out of that, and people are using this phrase all over the place, is social entrepreneurship, where business uses the best of the business practices, or entrepreneurs use the best business practices to make an impact on the greatest challenges of our time. And some are for-profit, and some are non-profit, and some are hybrid. And I became fascinated with this idea. Well, in the meantime, you know, my career moves on. I've worked for a few other very large corporations. I became a vice president of a company. I really enjoyed my work, and I was pretty good at it, I would say. So my career went on. I became the vice president of a organization 1,000 locations, 40,000 employees, and it was a big role. It was a challenging role. It was a, you know, politically complex role, as you can imagine. And at the same time, though, here's what I began to notice. If you are a corporation in the U.S. or Canada, and this is fairly common, I think, around the world, if you are a corporation, you have an obligation to maximize shareholder value, to maximize the return on investment for shareholders. That is a legal and fiduciary commitment on your part. It's a requirement on your part as part of doing business. If people are going to invest in you, you are required to pay them back the maximum amount that you possibly can. Now, most companies that are really smart, what they do, or the most successful companies, what they do is they differentiate their products and services in the marketplace in such a way that they get premium pricing from the marketplace. So the customer will gladly pay you $100 for a product or service that he or she perceives to be worth $200 to them. So if you maximize the value by differentiating your products and services, your customers will be glad to part with their money. They will cross the street to do business with you. And therefore, you maximize the amount of money that is available to return to the shareholders. That's how successful business works. But here's the problem with that. Shareholders and customers are not the only stakeholders of business. And so the employees of the business are stakeholders. The communities in which we work, they are stakeholders. The planet upon which we all depend is a stakeholder in our business. But the law says we must maximize the benefit to only one of those stakeholders, and that is shareholders. And businesses have tried to do good by maximizing the value for multiple stakeholders, including employees, including the planet, including the communities in which we work. And activist shareholders, and this is happening more and more, activist shareholders will sue the company and force them to bring more of those profits to the shareholders. Now, let me just be really clear. I am a shareholder in many companies, and I want a return on investment in my portfolio, and there is nothing wrong with that. I think that's a reasonable expectation. And yet, there's something broken because we have so purely applied this model of maximizing return to shareholders while minimizing the return to employees, communities, and the planet, and other stakeholders. And so there's something broken in that process. And this really began to get under my skin. And at the beginning of 2014, I sat down and I wrote a series of blog posts that I called My Jerry Maguire Moment. And if you remember the movie Jerry Maguire was a sports agent, and he had a moment of clarity, and in the middle of the night, he wrote a mission statement where he talked about values and about returning to those values of serving their clients and of doing good in the world. And we all know how that turned out. I mean, Jerry Maguire lost his job. Now, he was able to begin again, and there's more to the story. But it was this moment of clarity, and I felt like I was having my Jerry Maguire moment. Now, at the same time, there were other things happening in my life and my family, and my daughter needed some of my time, and my grandchildren needed to spend some time with me, and there was a lot going on, and my values were not aligned to my employer or to basically to many employers in the U.S. And it's not that their values were wrong or that my values were wrong or right. It's not a judgment about whose values are right or wrong. It's just that our values were not aligned. And so I took the opportunity to step away from my corporate life and to spend some time with my family. And I spent time with my grandchildren, and I, you know, explored different ways of making money, and I started a company, and, you know, I started the startup life. And any of you who have been through that, you know what that's like. So what did I do in the middle of starting the business? I started writing a book, and I'm writing the book right now. And of course, as I'm interviewing people for the book, I begin to hear these stories. And these are stories not of business as usual, but stories of businesses finding their way to do good in the world. And so I've begun to, with their permission, collect these stories. And I'm having conversations with different people. And that's where this podcast is coming from. So what is a social entrepreneur? A social entrepreneur uses the best practices from entrepreneurship, where there is curiosity and exploration and empathy in the marketplace and you know, funding and all the processes of entrepreneurship, and applies that process to taking on some of the biggest challenges of our time. Let's talk about the podcast for a while. Let's talk about what we can expect from the podcast. When it comes to format, well, the podcast is an interview format. So I will be interviewing founders. I will be interviewing thought leaders, and those thought leaders could be thought leaders in business or thought leaders on disruptive activities. I'm interviewing somebody who's talking about how algorithms are disrupting the way that business is done. And it's pretty fascinating stuff. I'll have thought leaders on some of the grand challenges of our time. Then I'll also talk to leaders who have founded and run accelerators and incubators. I'll talk to investors, and I'll also talk to business leaders. So these are people who can help, early stage social entrepreneurs or people who aspire to be social entrepreneurs to find their way. Some of the topics we're going to cover, that includes things like social entrepreneurship, startup life, benefit corporations, grand challenges, impact investing, funding, even personal and leadership development. But these topics, they're meant to inspire you to make an impact. So that's what this podcast is about. The frequency will be, 3 times a week. The length will be about, 30 to 45 minutes mostly. We want to give enough time for the story to develop, and yet, not so much time that you can't consume it on a commute. So depending on where you live, you may have a 10 minute commute, or you may have a, 1.5 hour commute. But we think around that 30 to 45 minute, that's primarily where we're going to be, shooting for. And so far from the recordings I've done, that's about right. So that's it. That's me. That's what I'm doing. That's my story. And that's how we ended up here together talking on this podcast. Okay, so earlier I said that you could find the show notes. So here's how you do that. You go to, are you ready? TonyLloyd.com/000. But here's the tricky bit. Here's the thing you have to remember. Lloyd is spelled with one L. So it's TonyLloyd.com/000. And you can find the show notes. And there I'm going to link up some of the books that I have read. I'm going to link up the article that I read in the New York Times and on Christmas 2010. And then I'm going to leave you today with two challenges, or two calls to action. And here they are. Number one, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, especially on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review. Now, if you don't use iTunes for your podcast, that's fine. We're also available on Stitcher Radio, and we're available on SoundCloud. The second challenge I want to leave you with is this. You are part of this movement. You're listening today for a reason. You were born on purpose. And I'm here to tell you, this life is not that long. And we have a short window of opportunity to make an impact. So my challenge to you is to take this one beautiful, amazing, but very short life that you have and go make an impact. With that, I'll talk to you next time on the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks.